This is Learning from Genocide, a series brought to you by the Holocaust Memorial Day Trust. In these episodes, we will be giving a voice to just some of the incredible stories of human endurance in the face of evil. I'm Rachel Century, Head of Research for the Holocaust Memorial Day Trust, and over the next few weeks, as well as talking to experts who have dedicated their lives to raising awareness, we'll also be hearing from those who have survived the Holocaust and atrocities of Cambodia, Bosnia, Rwanda, and Darfur.
Everybody should be learning about the Holocaust because we are all part of society and we all have a responsibility to keep that safe.
Personally, the hardest part for me to hear of her story was that part before the war, because no one can really comprehend Auschwitz, how terrible it was.
These are the first-hand stories of the people who were there and who, against all odds, survived genocide. Welcome back to Learning from Genocide, where we continue to look at the Holocaust. And after hearing the heartbreaking events from the early life of Martin Stern, we now look at how important Holocaust education is, what we need to learn from stories like Martin's, and how it relates to other genocides which have happened around the world. To help us understand these issues, we'll be hearing from Olivia Marks-Waldman, Chief Executive of the Holocaust Memorial Day Trust, and Dov Foreman, who is bringing his great-grandmother Lily's story of surviving Auschwitz to a whole new generation. But first, let's hear from Olivia about why we need Holocaust Memorial Day, which takes place every year on January 27th.
It's important to be commemorated for so many reasons. Firstly, the deliberate, organised murder of 6 million Jewish people within living memory is so horrific and appalling. Everybody should be kind of stopped in their tracks and reflect on that. So to have one day when we set aside time to reflect on this horrendous episode is really important, kind of almost for our own humanity. When the Holocaust became known, the reaction was never again. Never again can we as a society allow this. And yet, murder, attempted annihilation, destruction of culture has happened again and again. In other words, genocide has taken place in the years since the Holocaust in Cambodia, in Rwanda, in Bosnia and Darfur. And we absolutely should have a responsibility to reflect on what has happened. And more than that, we know that even today, there is persecution of people in places around the world where we think it potentially could lead to genocide. And we also know that even without a genocidal situation, people are still persecuted and face prejudice just because of who they are and the community they belong to, whether that's because of their sexuality, because of their disability, because of their faith. So there are so many reasons why we should be learning about the Holocaust and what has happened since and what is happening in the world around us, and use that to take steps within our own communities to make a better society. Our responsibility is to ensure that people across the United Kingdom have that opportunity to learn and reflect and take action. So we promote and support Holocaust Memorial Day in communities across the country. We organise the national UK ceremony so that people can learn from genocide for a better future.
I understand that you have your own family connection to the Holocaust through your grandfather.
My grandfather came to Britain from Poland in the early years of the 20th century. He was not directly affected by the Holocaust, of course, at that period. But there are members of his family who he left behind who would have been affected by it, who were murdered. But beyond that, Judaism is a faith, both of memory and of the future. And Judaism makes memory a very lived experience today. At Passover every year, we say, we were slaves in Egypt. Now, of course, I wasn't a slave in Egypt. That was something that happened thousands of years ago. But we make it a present experience because that collective memory informs what we do and who we are as Jews today. And in that way, Jewish people feel the Holocaust is part of their collective family community experience, whether or not we ourselves had parents or grandparents or great-grandparents who were directly affected. So the impact both of being a member of the Jewish community and my own grandfather's wider family undoubtedly impact on me personally. But a Holocaust Memorial Day is a day for everybody, regardless of our own personal history. Everybody should be learning about the Holocaust because we are all part of society and part of a wider community and humanity. And we all have a responsibility to keep that safe for everybody.
And what's it like for you to be working so closely with people who have survived genocide?
It's such a privilege. And I didn't really appreciate that before I started working here. But working at the Holocaust Memorial Day Trust and coming into such close contact with survivors has felt and continues to feel a really precious privilege. With Holocaust survivors, of course, coming to the end of their lives, and many of the survivors I worked with a few years ago have passed away, and their loss and their absence is deeply felt all the time. But to be working with those who are still with us is so precious. To be working at the Holocaust Memorial Day Trust at this period of history is so significant and is such a driving force for what I do. Working with survivors of more recent genocides feels a privilege because of very different reasons. Many of them are at the stage of their lives that Holocaust survivors were two or three decades ago. They are rebuilding their lives, they're working, they're building their families. And they don't often have the time to be able to share their experiences simply because of the pressures of rebuilding. So when they do spend their time working with us, oh my goodness, what a privilege that is to be able to work with them and enable their experiences to reach such a wide audience. It's an honour. I don't take that for granted.
What relevance does Holocaust education have to us today?
There's a further reason why commemorating the Holocaust and recent genocides is so important today. And it was expressed so beautifully by Dr. Martin Stern, who said that civilization is a very thin veneer. It was a very powerful phrase, and it also reminded me of our founding documents that established Holocaust Memorial Day, which said that civilization is fragile and that the Holocaust undermined civilization. And if you reflect on that, it's so powerful. Civilization is fragile. We take so much for granted today. We just assume that we live in a civilized society, but it's fragile. And today it's under threat as people are pushed to extremism and as the Holocaust is denied and distorted. That history, that the facts of what happened are deliberately distorted in some places. We just have to remind ourselves annually, Holocaust Memorial Day every year gives us that opportunity and that reminder that we have an absolute responsibility to maintain civilized society and bonds of humanity with other people. And it's hugely important that we do that.
My thanks to Olivia Marks-Waldman for joining me today. Dolph Foreman is a normal 17-year-old thinking about his A-levels and having fun with his friends. But there is something that sets him apart from the rest of his teenage peers. He's a published author, and the book he wrote was a collaboration with his 97-year-old great-grandmother, Lily Ebert. Lily was born in 1923 in Hungary, the eldest daughter in a family of six children. At the age of 20, her life was ripped apart when in July 1944, she, along with her mother, younger brother, and three sisters, were deported to Auschwitz-Birkenau. Lily's mother Nina, younger brother Bella, and younger sister Berta were immediately sent to the gas chambers, whilst Lily and her sisters Renny and Piri were selected for work in the camp. Lily's promise, How I Survived Auschwitz and Found the Strength to Live, details what happened to Lily and what she saw around her in the Holocaust. Dov Foreman joins me now. Dov, when did you first become aware of what happened to your great-grandmother?
So I think growing up, I was always aware that my great-grandmother was a Holocaust survivor. I went to a Jewish primary school, so I was also always aware of the Holocaust, but I don't think that was in great detail. And I certainly didn't know about Auschwitz or what a death camp was or meant. All I knew was that my great-grandmother was a Holocaust survivor and that a Holocaust happened and 6 million Jews died. But I don't think it was very personal at all until I was about in year 5 or 6, when I remember one of my friends who was in the year above me came over to my house and said, "Oh, Dov, I know your great-grandmother is a Holocaust survivor. Can I ask her to see her tattoo?" And for us at home, we would never dream of ever asking her. I had never asked her to see her tattoo. I don't really remember seeing it before that either. That was the first time when it really hit me that, yes, my great-grandmother is not just a Holocaust survivor, but she was actually there. She was in the Holocaust. And I think at a young age, you don't realize that. Someone can have a label, but you might not realize what that label means. And I might have known about it before, but that was the first time I remember being exposed to the Holocaust as such.
How do you think that having a Holocaust survivor for a great-grandmother has shaped your life?
It shaped my life in a huge way. I mean, not many 17-year-olds, they might be interested in the Holocaust, but not as interested as I am. My grandmother's a psychologist, so she often talks about generational trauma and how trauma passes down the generations. And she feels it massively. And so does actually my mum's generation more in the family. They speak about how the Holocaust has affected them and how the trauma has been passed down. For me, I don't necessarily feel the trauma as such, and I don't feel the pain. But I'm certainly very aware of anti-Semitism and not scared about it, but very aware and always quick to point it out and want to fight it when I see it. And that might well be related to my great-grandma being a Holocaust survivor, but it might also not be. So it's hard for me to say. Maybe when I'm older, I'll be able to reflect on it and see. But it's certainly given me a passion for my Jewish identity. And it's allowed me to spread Holocaust awareness and testimony a lot more. And it's given me that passion to do so.
You said it's not very common for 17-year-olds to be so interested in the Holocaust. It's also, of course, not so common for 17-year-olds to write a book, co-author a book. Can you tell us a little bit about how the book came about, what it was like to write a book?
During the UK lockdowns, me and my great-grandma, we wrote a book together, which is called Lily's Promise: How I Survived Auschwitz and Found the Strength to Live. And I guess I'll get straight into the title, which is probably the best place to start. Why is the book called Lily's Promise? It's very simple. When my great-grandmother was in Auschwitz, she promised herself that if she survived, she would tell the world what happened there. And the book is that fulfillment of that promise. And that's why we went with Lily's Promise. And then the subtitle, that was a tough one. I actually came up with that together. My great-grandma, we sat there one day and we were deciding what we wanted the subtitle to be. And it was tough because we didn't want the book just to be about her Auschwitz experience. There are hundreds of books about that. It was very clear from the beginning that we didn't just want the book to be about how she survived Auschwitz. Of course, that's a huge part, and the experiences that she saw in Auschwitz, that's a huge part of her story and of the book. But we also wanted it to be about carrying on and building a family and having a great-grandson who then eventually wants to spread that story with her. And so the book focuses on positivity. It focuses on rebuilding a new life after the Holocaust without parents, without money, without belongings, in a separate country, without the language. And I think that's very important. There's a lot you can learn from that. And I think it teaches people that no matter how low you are in life, you can always build and you can always come back from that. And I think what's unique about our book especially is, as you say, that it's written by a 17-year-old with their great-grandmother, who is 97 at the time. I know as a 17-year-old what I would want to hear and what I would be able to take in. And I think what's very unique about this book is it's very much aimed not only at people who are interested in Holocaust history and history in general and World War II history. It's not just aimed at over 40s. It's also aimed at young people my age, 17-year-olds, maybe even younger or around my age, who might not even be interested in the Holocaust or might not have heard about it, because it incorporates the use of social media to share Holocaust testimony. It incorporates how a 17-year-old can talk to their great-grandmother and just learn more about their story. And so I think it's a universal book for all ages and for all types of people. And hopefully people will learn a lot about it.
How have your peers received the book? What have your 17-year-old friends and, you know, people at your school, how have they responded to it?
So they've been incredibly supportive throughout. Obviously, writing a book is a very long process, which has involved me sometimes missing some lessons in school. I mean, the school have been very supportive, but so have my peers. They've always got the notes for me from lessons if I miss a lesson. Sometimes they'll like to joke about it, which is good, because obviously it's not good to joke about the Holocaust, but to joke about the process of at 17 writing a book, it's good because you need to kind of distract yourself from the long work of writing. And sometimes you can kind of sit there for hours and not really get anywhere. And so kind of sitting and talking with your friends is very helpful, just to kind of clear your mind and then get back to writing or back to brainstorming about what you want to talk about or what ideas you want to get down on paper. When you're typing something on words, 300 pages, it's kind of, it doesn't seem real. And so you kind of, you feel that book in hands for the first time, and it's just an unbelievable feeling. It's a major step for Holocaust education throughout the world and in the UK especially, because there hasn't been a major Holocaust book for quite a while now. And I think these really are the last moments of survivor testimony. And so it was really important for us that the book was historically accurate. And we had the Auschwitz Museum and a few other museums check it through every detail. So we made sure that it's historically accurate. But I also think survivor testimony is the best way to teach Holocaust testimony or the Holocaust in general. I do history A-level at school, and so I realized that the Holocaust just can't be done justice through a classroom or a simple textbook. When someone says the number 6 million to you, you just can't comprehend that. But you can comprehend one person's story. You can comprehend Lily Ebert's story, what she lost, and her family's story. And I think hopefully through the book, people in the UK will be able to connect much more to these stories and carry them on for the next generation.
Have your peers read the book now that it's finished? And you said they were very supportive throughout. What do they think of the finished product?
Most of them have read the book. I guess we're overwhelmed by the response that we've had, not just from our peers, but from random people throughout the world, and especially in the UK. Just the positive response and the kind messages that have been flowing in. I got an email actually from our publisher yesterday to say that they've never seen such positive responses on an Amazon review page. It really means a lot to us. I mean, the hard work that we've put in, and one can't really imagine how hard it must be for Lily to share these stories, the harrowing things that she saw in Auschwitz. So for her to know that her hard work, and it really was hard work for her to sit there for weeks giving me this information of what she saw in Auschwitz, to know that the hard work that she put in mentally and physically on this book has paid off, and that people are, I don't know if enjoying is the right word, but learning a lot from it and finding it inspiring, and hopefully they'll pass it on to others, and hopefully as many people as possible will be able to read it.
You've spoken a little bit there about what it was like to work with your great-grandmother. Has your relationship changed? Are you closer as a result? And what do the rest of the family feel?
So I definitely think we're a lot closer. Firstly, I think spending every day together for nearly a year writing makes you a lot closer, but particularly the subject of family tragedy, I guess, it's even worse. But losing her whole family in Auschwitz, me having to sit there with her and go through her whole life journey made us closer in a way too. She often says that she found it much easier to speak to me and my generation, the great-grandchildren, rather than the grandchildren or children. A lot of people say, just from reading the book, that they noticed that we're very similar in personality. We're both very outgoing and charismatic and confident. We work very well as a team, and maybe that's because of our personalities, or maybe that's just because we both have the same mission to educate the world about the Holocaust and make sure that these stories are never forgotten.
You are a very unusual 17-year-old. You haven't taken a typical journey. Do you think that you're going to inspire other grandchildren or great-grandchildren of survivors to work with their grandparent or great-grandparent to tell their story?
Well, I certainly hope that we've inspired. I say we because it's not just me. It's mainly my great-grandmother. Yeah, I hope that we've inspired other people, not only grandchildren and great-grandchildren of survivors, but anyone who's listening and anyone in the world who sees our content, to go out there and realize that these are the last moments. And if we forget the history, we are doomed to repeat it. And we are the younger generation. Most people that see my stuff on social media, our content, our demographic is mainly 5 to 25-year-olds. And I think what the young generations have to realize is that we have to build the world that we want to live in. If we don't do it, no one else will. We're going to build our future. If we want to live in a world with peace and harmony, and one where people are kind to each other and there's no intolerance, we have to learn the lessons of the past, because only 75 years ago, there were factories built to kill the Jewish people and to kill millions of people. Unfortunately, anti-Semitism and racism and hate is on the rise again throughout the world. And we can only change that by learning from the past and sharing the stories of living witnesses who were there 75 years ago in the Holocaust. So I would encourage everyone, not only grandchildren and great-grandchildren of survivors, to learn and share testimony. And I think often people will say, well, it's hard. How can I reach anyone? How will I be able to share these stories? But what I want to encourage other young people especially is that when I started on TikTok, we had 0 followers. I mean, I didn't even know what TikTok was. I just downloaded it because I saw that a lot of people were going viral, and why can't I? And I just started posting videos of my great grandma, and very quickly they got traction. And I think it's not about who you are, what type of platform you have. Even with 1 follower, if you just reach one person, that will make a difference in the world. If the content you put out is positive and actually important, then people will listen, and before long you'll see that people do want to listen and will be watching your videos and listening to your content. And so I would just encourage everyone to do what you can.
And what was Lily's life like before everything was so cruelly ripped away from her?
Personally, the hardest part for me to hear of her story when we were interviewing for the book was that part before the war, because no one can really comprehend Auschwitz. So you can't really understand how terrible it was. And I think it's hard for us to actually understand that and feel it as much as you can feel someone's life before and how much they lost. And it was incredibly hard for me to listen to that and see how similar her life then was to the Jewish life that we live now in London. And she was the eldest of 6 children. She was born in 1923, which makes her 97 now. She had a very nice childhood in the outskirts of Hungary, very outdoor living there, and they played in the garden most of their childhood life. And she was actually quite old when the Nazis invaded Hungary in 1944. She was 20 years old already. And very quickly, things started to change. Hungary was one of the last countries in Europe to be invaded. And by the time they invaded Hungary, 2/3 of European Jewry was already wiped out. And the Nazis invaded, and within a few weeks, they were taken into a ghetto where they had to wear the yellow star. They were only there for a few weeks because straight away they were taken on transport, 5-day transport, no food, no water, cramped, 80 to 90 people in a cabin. And they were taken to a place, they didn't know where it was, and they were taken to Auschwitz-Birkenau. Her father had died before the war, and her brother was taken to slave labor, but Lily arrived with three sisters and one younger brother and her mother. And on arrival, her mother, younger brother, and youngest sister were taken left. They were taken straight to the gas chambers by Dr. Mengele. And Lily remembers that moment very clearly, standing in front of Dr. Mengele. She describes him with shiny shoes and white gloves, and she remembers standing there in front of him when he did the selection process. And she was sent right with her two sisters, and she was there in Auschwitz for 4 months until October 1944, when she was taken to slave labor in Germany. She was in slave labor for about 5 months in a subcamp of Buchenwald, and she was then liberated in April 1945 by American soldiers from the Death March. They were marching for 5 days without food, without water, without shoes, in freezing conditions, and eventually they saw the American planes flying low, and they were liberated. She often says that in some ways the liberation was the hardest part, because when they were there in Auschwitz, they couldn't take it in. But at that moment, it was finished. They were no longer prisoners of war. They were no longer under the Nazis, and suddenly it hit them that, look, we're here without parents, without family, and we're in the middle of Germany. We don't even know where we are, what's happened to us over the past year. We don't look human. We don't look like we used to look anymore. And I think she says that that's really the hardest part, because that's when they had to come to terms with what they went through. And I think she's just incredibly strong to have not only come out of that and build a family. And I mean, she's got 10 grandchildren and 34 great-grandchildren, but to want to put that into paper and to relive these memories is just, I mean, she's an absolute inspiration.
Lily's Promise: How I Survived Auschwitz and Found the Strength to Live, by Lily Ebert and Dov Foreman, is available to buy now. My thanks to all of my guests who have told us their experiences in this episode: Olivia Marks-Waldman, Dov Foreman, and of course, Dr. Martin Stern, who we heard from in part one. In the next episode of Learning from Genocide, we'll be looking at the other groups, apart from the Jewish community, who suffered at the hands of Nazi persecution.
These so-called Rhineland mongrels were sterilized by force as a group in 1937.
When people think about victims of Nazi persecution, they do not think of British people, because mainland Britain was not occupied.
Goodbye for now. Learning from Genocide is produced by Amanda Redman and is brought to you by the Holocaust Memorial Day Trust and Trafalgar Strategy. For more information on the stories that you've heard today and ways for you to be involved in what we do, please go to our website, hmd.org.uk.